This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so thrilled today. I have in the studio with me three guests, and everybody knows I love to have people in the studio, and I'm so excited. And it is a group from Newport Richey Public Library, the Writers Group, and I am so happy to welcome them. First of all, the leader, and I think you're the president of the group. It's so wonderful again to have you here, Catherine Long, right?
Yes, that's right. Hi, Patsy. It's wonderful to be here again. We enjoy every time we come here.
Well, it is a joy always to have you. And then we have, and I'm holding up his book right now, Randall Shantz, and it is a book that everybody is going to enjoy. And
thank you.
So there. Hi, Randall.
Hey, how you doing?
You want to be called Randall or Randy?
Randy's fine.
Randy. Mm-hmm. Okay, Randy. And then we've got a skit artist here. I love skits. And Henry Berner is here, and I'm holding this up too, and this is just fantastic. Hi, Henry.
Hi.
Okay, this is going to be fun. You're going to tell us all about wonderful skits, and I'm a great believer in doing skits. That's years and years of being in the Boy Scouts.
Thank you, Patsy.
Okay, and I want to give a special hello to Andrea Hiotis, who is listening today. She is at Michelle's Chocolates up there in Newport Richey, and that is the home of the hot chocolate bomb. They are unbelievable, and if anybody ever gets up to that area, your area, they have to go to Michelle's, right?
That's right.
Okay. So, guys, you are all busy and keeping busy all the time.
Well, we try to stay busy, yes. But I just wanted to let you know also that I'm the secretary treasurer of the group. Our leader is Larry Serfazzo. He was here with us one time, but he wasn't able to come today. So I wanted to talk with you, Patsy, about the meet and greet event we're having on March the 4th. From 10:30 in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon. It will be held at the Newport Richey Public Library at 5939 Main Street in Newport Richey. And we have, so far, about 30 authors and illustrators who will be all in one place, so people can come and buy their books and talk to them about the writing process, and we'll have readings from people's books, and it'll just be a fun day.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing to do. I'm such a strong believer in writers' groups, because you really, when you get together, you inspire each other.
That's exactly right. Everybody in our group talks about how we are one another's muses. We keep each other inspired and keep those words flowing.
So, now you have your book here. It's called Deadly Secrets, and it's called 1928 Cozy Mystery. I love this, because it's about, well, you have to tell us, but it's about somebody named Cherry. And when I was a young girl, I was a candy striper in a hospital, and I loved it. It was so much fun to work in a hospital, and there was a series of books called Cherry Ames at that time.
Yes, I read every single one. I was hooked on Cherry Ames books.
Well, that's so it's come right down through all these years, and you bring the stories to life. So tell us about this book, Deadly Secrets.
It was inspired by the Cherry Ames books. I used to sit up at night under my blankets with the flashlight reading the book way past lights out. And I was crazy about it. I wanted to be a nurse as a young girl, and I also was a candy striper at our hospital, a local hospital. But that just didn't turn out, and I ended up becoming a missionary instead. So you never know what direction life is going to take you. But I love those books so much, and I wanted to write a mystery story. And the girl, Cherry, in the Cherry Ames books inspired me, so I decided to borrow her name. Her name is really Charity in my book, but they call her Cherry. It's a nickname. And so she gets involved in this murder that has taken place on the campus of USC, where she is in a nurse's training, studying nursing in the 1920s. And I did a lot of research on things like, you know, the way they spoke and the way they dressed and all of that sort of thing to try to make it as realistic as possible. It was a fun book to write, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, I think you did, because as I was reading it, I kept saying to myself, oh, well, you know, the one thing about the Cherry Ames books, they were inspirational to so many girls, and although you didn't become a nurse, you became a missionary, because the books gave us that feeling that we could get out there and do things, which was so important, because, you know, up to then, girls stayed on the farm, you know? But when we read those books, we realized, hey, we could go anywhere and do anything.
Well, you know, you're the only other person I think I've ever talked to who knew about Cherry Ames books. Everybody knows Nancy Drew.
I have all the Cherry Ames books.
But the Cherry, still?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow. I'm so impressed. But those were great books. They were little mystery stories, just like the Nancy Drew stories, where she got involved in solving mysteries, and so much fun to read and very inspirational. You're right.
So again, you've been having fun, and I like that you put it in the 1928 era. I like that era.
Oh, me too. I had a lot of fun with that.
I thought that was very good, because it's just lots to play with there. Isn't it so much fun to be a writer when you can do all this research?
It is. And I actually got kind of off in that vein by watching the Miss Fisher mysteries, which I loved. So I thought, well, I want to put my book in that same era.
It is a wonderful series. And well, for me, you know, the wonderful thing with my mind is that when I see something as a, when I read, if I see it as a movie in my mind, I'm hooked, and I love that. I love that feeling.
Yeah, me
and
too.
That's what happens. So I'm reading the book, and I say, "Oh my! I'm reading a book, but I've seen it all as a movie in my mind." So it's just wonderful. So, are you planning to do more along this vein?
Yeah, I have another one that is a mystery, sort of similar, only that one is set in 1815 England.
Ah!
So that it's a historical novel, but it's called Swift Secrets. So it's a different type of, a little bit different, you know, different type of era.
Well, I think it's wonderful. I love what you've done with this book. Nice mystery, nice story, and a character that I think, well, again, we need characters like her. We need Cherry Ames in our life. I think if you have it in the back of your mind, if you have somebody like that, somebody who wants a little bit of excitement and is clever, it's just a fun read.
You know, thank you. I appreciate that. I enjoyed it a lot. It was a lot of fun to write.
And, of course, as I said, working with the group and getting to work with them and talk to them about your project, that's part of the fun.
Oh, absolutely. The members of our group are so amazing. I mean, they pick up the smallest things that can improve your writing and make it more solid and more impactful. And gosh, I just get so much out of our group. We critique one another's writing, and as we read each week, and it has just done so much to help me learn to become a better writer.
Well, I think it's important that writers get together like this. And part of the problem sometimes that I find with writers just coming, you know, into this whole area of their life. It's a new part of their life. They've been doing something else, and now they want to write. I got a lot of interviews, right after the NaNoWriMo, the National Novel Writing Month. And all the interviews I did afterwards, I would talk to the authors who had published books, and so many of them had started as NaNoWriMo writers. And they learned so much from that.
Yeah, we have a couple of people, members of our group, who do NaNoWriMo every year. I tried it 1 year, but I have a hard time making myself...
Well, I think, it's not something I would do every year. I did it 1 year. My goddaughter, Kanisha, encouraged me to do it. She had done it quite a few times. And that's a lot to do 50,000 words in a month.
It is.
But the end result is when you have something, and then if you get together with a group of people to work with, and, that just opens up so many possibilities to you. So, for example, Randy, you, we'll move the microphone. We have to move the microphone a little here. Tell us about Clearinghouse, because, again, you're part of the group.
Yeah, it's a great group.
How many people are in the group?
It fluctuates, but, there's usually about 8 or 12 there at any given time that are active.
Uh-huh. We have 72 members altogether.
But they move around. I know. Sometimes you're writing, and then you stop, and you come back, and you get back to it. So with you, Randy, how did you get involved with the group? And tell us about Clearinghouse, which is your book.
I was working at a flea market, and Jan, who's one of the members of our group, came by and saw a bunch of my books at the flea market and was looking at them, and he's like, did you write these? Because my picture's on the back. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, I have no idea if they're any good or not, but I'll buy them. So he bought some. Mercy sale, pity sale. And and then a couple of weeks later, he came by and he's like, you should check out our group. It's a pretty good group. I think you'd like it. And so apparently he read them, I guess.
And so you joined. Mm-hmm. And your particular interest is sci-fi.
Yeah, I mostly write science fiction.
And, of course, part of that comes from your background.
Yeah, my dad was a NASA engineer. He worked at Cape Kennedy during the height of the Apollo and Skylab programs. And so I grew up in Cocoa Beach. Well, I spent a lot of my childhood in Cocoa Beach. Space is just kind of the sea we swam in when I was a kid.
So did you get to meet a lot of the astronauts?
I don't know. I was pretty young. I honestly don't know. I mean, they would have things on the Cape that would be like pancake breakfasts and stuff like that for the families of the people that were working there and stuff. And sometimes there were astronauts there, and sometimes there weren't. And I have absolutely no idea if I did or not. I asked my dad a couple times. He's like, I don't remember. I think we had Alan Shepard there once, but I don't remember if you were there at that time. You know, so I don't know. I might have.
So you were a little. I did get to work with one of the Apollo astronauts, Walt Cunningham.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wrote the script for
his
book.
He just passed away. Yeah.
Yes, he just passed away. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I wrote the script for his book, All American Boys.
He was the tallest of the Apollo astronauts.
Well, not that tall. they weren't very tall.
No, he was 6'1", and so you couldn't be above 6 feet.
They had to fit into the capsule.
Yeah, he spent the whole night before his final test to see whether he was going to get approved or not, jumping up and down to compress his spine. So he came in just at 6 feet, although he's normally 6'1". So he cheated.
So that interest there in being in the space era sort of piqued your interest?
Yeah, I was a NASA brat.
Yeah, a NASA brat. Mm-hmm. So tell us about this book.
Okay.
When I started it, I thought, oh, this is... I love this start. I thought it was so funny.
Thank you. Well, it's a collection of short stories. The title comes from, if you write short stories or really anything, you will inevitably have projects that you just kind of lose steam in halfway through, or you kind of hit a point where you're not sure where to go with it, or some connection isn't fitting. So you just end up with a drawer full of incomplete stories that are usually pretty good, but you just never got back to them. So I decided to take a bunch of those and dig them out. And the ones that were good, You know, with the hindsight of anywhere from 1 to 10 years, I was able to figure out how to complete them. And then I decided that I should take all of these things and stick them in one volume and call it Clearinghouse, because I was clearing out my drawer.
Okay. So when you're writing, do you get this absolute thrill of when you see your words on paper that I've talked here?
Yes.
About?
Yeah.
Because it gets so thrilling when you're writing and suddenly you put the words down and you look at them again and you say, my goodness, I wrote that.
Yeah.
And it comes out of my head.
Yeah, you've got this thing that was just floating around in your head and all of a sudden it's got physical form. It's really amazing the first couple of times you do it.
Well, you know, I'm just going to tell Big Ed in the control room, Big Ed, get ready and pull up Bria Burton's Book Buzz for, I think, the February one. I'm going to play that in a minute in honor of Randy.
No.
And we can talk about more sci-fi, because we have here on Joy on Paper, as for those of you know, my listeners and for you guys, we do book buzzes where we review a book and we... whether it's a mystery, or I will have Rita Moreau does the mysteries, so I will have her do one for you. And Randy, Bria Burton, who is a sci-fi author,
mm-hmm.
does them for sci-fi books, so I will have her do one for you.
Oh, thank you. Wow,
because
gosh.
It's fun. And mm-hmm. Let's listen to this one that we have, and this is Bria Burton doing a sci-fi book buzz.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2021 release from a best-selling author, Faded Blades by Ilona Andrews. The USA Today and Wall Street Journal best-selling novella is available in print, ebook, and audiobook with stellar narration by Aaron Shedlock. Let's download the book buzz. In a distant galaxy, sworn enemies Matthias Baenas and Ramona Adler are the heads of their respective kinsmen families, both genetically enhanced Sakare, which means they're each as lethal as their ancestors, who feuded to the point of near annihilation over a century prior. The conflict trickled into the present, a kind of Cold War space race between the ruling families on planet Rada, all vying to adapt a coveted tech related to the bioengineered swords and shields that emerge from beneath a Sakare's skin. A data breach in both families leads to their unlikely alliance and sends Ramona and Matthias on a secret quest to recover what was stolen. If they can defeat their mutual enemies, can anything stop them from taking out each other? This sizzling, page-turning science fiction romance with overtones of Romeo and Juliet fires off like a rocket and leaves the reader breathless. Author Ilona Andrews is the pseudonym for dynamic duo Ilona and Gordon, who have been married for almost 3 decades and have teamed up as writers for nearly 2 decades, co-authoring several best-selling novel series, including the #1 New York Times best-selling Kate Daniels series. They currently reside in Texas with their 2 children and many dogs and cats. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Ah, isn't cool. That nice?
Yeah.
Isn't that cool. Nice? And that's what Bria does. She does these wonderful little promos for authors who write sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have her do one for you.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much.
Okay. I'm that'll be fun.
Away.
She will enjoy that. And the wonderful thing is that we like to keep promoting authors. We'll play these long time after we, you know, interview an author. We'll play them. Well, we sometimes play them before we interview the author. Just get people buying the books, because that's one of the important things. And you have so much fun writing, but then you have to go out there and promote it.
That is the hard part. I've never had any success with that. I'm terrible at self-promotion.
Well, that is one of the things that writers are really finding difficult in this day and age. It's not the same as it was years ago.
No, and I talked to Harlan Ellison once years and years and years ago. We were friends for a while. And, you know, I was like, can you give me any clue how to get published? And he's like, honestly, no. you know, I came in at a time when it was very easy to do, and the industry has changed, and it's changed even more since ebooks and things like that came out. And he's like, if I were starting now, I wouldn't know how to do it.
So, it's true. It's very true. It's much. Mary Higgins Clark was on the program many times, and I loved her, and she was just wonderful. And she told me it was so wonderful in the old days when she would come out with a book, because they'd send her on a tour. The publisher would send her on a tour, and it would be first class. And in those days, it was always Pan Am or TWA, where you would get really, when you were in first class in those planes, you got first class service, and they would send along an assistant, usually a young guy who was, in the publishing house, and he would go along and then take care of all the travel things, all luggage, and going, getting to the hotel, and all of that, and getting to the place wherever she was going for the signings. Mm-hmm. By the end, she said it was crazy. She wouldn't do any tours because they wouldn't do that kind of, they wouldn't give you that kind of, even for her. And she'd have a million pre-sales before the book was even released. But publishers just stopped doing it. Mm-hmm. And so even the big publishers are mostly on their own. They might reimburse them for the travel, but they say, do it. So that's one of the things that I know it's very difficult.
Yeah.
But, when you're writing, the thing is, people write even if they're not selling big, because there's a fun of the writing.
There is. It's also kind of solitary and focused. So sometimes it just pulls you out of the rest of your life while you're doing it. When you get the holy fire in you, they're like, I have to get this down on paper. And then when you do so much of it, and it's not selling or whatever, that that can be or cannot be discouraging. It just kind of depends on the motivations of the individual person. But everybody hits this point where they're like, why am I doing this? There's not a visible material reward other than my own edification, which is really important and so on. But part of the reason that I wrote this one, part of the reason that I finished up all those old lingering stories was because I was going through this phase where I was actually pretty despondent about my complete lack of success. And I didn't want to leave the few fans I've got hanging waiting for another book. So I wrote this one, and there's a little frame story that interconnects some of them in there, which is about pretty clearly me just debating whether or not they should keep on doing it. And I wanted to get across the idea of not only of how cool it is to write stuff, but also how sometimes you can feel like you're banging your head against a wall.
Yeah, I know. I understand it. And it's, it is difficult, but one of the things that I have had so many authors here who have banged their heads and banged their heads. Mm-hmm. Now, my guest the other day was Stacy Lee. Her book was rejected by 29 publishers.
Wow.
Completely rejected. I mean, big time rejections. Mm-hmm. She sent it, she had found an agent who loved the story and said, mm-hmm. I would love to find somebody who would take this book. And the agent said, I don't think, it's going to be easy. And so they started sending it out. Month after month, really. It was a long process. Mm-hmm. 29 complete, absolute rejections by publishers who said, no way.
Yeah, that's about 11 more than I would have been able to handle.
Well, and that's what she felt at the time. Mm-hmm. But that 30th one took her book. She got a starred review from Publishers Weekly. Mm-hmm. And since then, she's been on a run.
That's fantastic.
And she was on the program, and her name is Stacy Lee, mm-hmm. and it is a delightful book. It's a middle grade book, a fantasy, wonderful, wonderful story called Winston Chu and the Whimsies. But she didn't give up. That's a lot of rejections. 29 major.
That is,
almost every publisher left in in the whole world. Mm-hmm. They even sent it off to England. And that's what happens. You never know.
Yeah. Also, you know, the more esoteric that your writing is, the harder it can be for a publisher to find a niche for it and pick it up. Like one guy I was talking to, he's like, "You know, I like your stories, but they're strange." And like, well, good strange or bad strange? And he said, "I think they're good strange, but you're basically manufacturing left-handed doorknob polishers here, and there's just really not a market for that."
Well, you see, that's what they had told. Yeah. Actually, they told Stacy. They're not publishable. Mm-hmm. They're not like anything else. Not, you know, just not going to do it. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, suddenly things change. You never know.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, we're going to have some commercials, and then we'll be back, and we'll talk about some skits, and we're still going to talk more about your books, too. Okay, Catherine and Randy, and we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And I am back, and I am in the studio, and I have guests. I am so happy that I have guests, because I love guests in the studio. And they are from the Newport Richie Public Library, the writers group that meets up there, and they get together, and they talk books, and they talk about writing, and they come out with these wonderful, wonderful books, and they're going to have a big event on March 4th from 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., and they're inviting everybody to come out there and meet a bunch of local authors and have it's always a fun time up there in Newport Richie. And while you're there, you can go to Michelle's Chocolates and get some bombs, because she makes the best chocolate bombs ever. But again, Catherine, thank you so much. Catherine Long is with me. She's the author of Deadly Secrets. And do you want to introduce Henry Berner, who's going to talk about his Skitivia, book one?
I would be happy to. Henry is a relatively new member of our group. He joined It's been a year or so now.
Time flies. I think it's been about a year.
And we were so entertained when he started with us because it's so unusual what he does. He hands out copies of each section of the skit each week. We meet every Wednesday from around 4 in the afternoon till about 7 in the evening. And we all get up and share what was something we've written, and then we critique each other's writings and help each other fix mistakes or problems and make our writing better. And Henry had us all in stitches because so many of his skits are very funny. And so we have enjoyed him a lot. And he gets usually one member of the group to read one of the parts with him, and they do the skit, actually do the skit in our meetings. So we have a lot of fun. It's a lot of great fun.
Well, the book is Skit Trivia, and which is really nice because my son, when he was in college, well, university, when they were getting together, that's before the pandemic, they used to get together once a week and they would do trivia night at the local pub, and because it was just a way to get together, and they loved trivia, and my son was always usually the winner because he was homeschooled, so he had a wide knowledge of all subjects. He could be history, they could be literature, they could do anything, and he would probably know it, and then he'd also do the sports, and he'd know practically everyone, so he was always welcomed on to the groups. But this idea of getting together, Henry, I like this. So it's Henry Berner, and you are originally from Ohio?
Yes, that's right.
And you're here, and now you are making people laugh. So tell us about your book.
Okay, well, thank you, Patsy, and it's great to be here on Joy with Paper. Thank you for having me. And my book, I think what kind of started me interested in it was, as a child, the family reunion. We, as kids, always did skits, and the grown-ups, too. I enjoy writing it. And I worked as an activity director at one time, and I just didn't have time to pursue the writing like I did. But I've gotten a lot better at it since I've joined the writers group. And
it's wonderful that there are all types of books, and it's great to have a book like this now that people are done with the pandemic and they can start getting together to just sort of break the ice when you have a group and you get together. And this is fun. This is just a fun book. So it's what you do is you have an introduction here to skits that people can put on.
Right. Two people perform the skit, and then the audience, if you will, has a chance to answer the memory questions at the end. And in a way, it's different than regular trivia because everybody's kind of got the same basic knowledge of what the answers to the trivia is. So it doesn't matter if one person is more familiar with the topic than another. They're all built into
the storyline here.
Right, exactly.
And it's just to have fun because it is great, really, if people start realizing the importance of being together and turning off their devices and actually talking and being together, having a nice meal, snacks, a little game like this. This is fantastic.
Right. I've done it at a few places. A couple of my friends had little skit trivia parties for me, and they invited their neighbors in. And two of us would perform the skit and then do the game. It was really a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to promote interaction between people and some mental stimulation and comedy. These are
important. I'm glad you mentioned mental stimulation because it is so important. And I think one of the things that people do not realize is that it is not, You cannot spend your life watching reruns on television over and over. You're not stimulating your mind. Our brains, you know, like Hercule Poirot and Agatha Christie's books, always talks about the gray cells. You've got a lot of gray cells in there. You need to keep always those, the little sparks going from gray cell to gray cell. But if you watch the same, exactly the same shows over and over, and they're almost all the same, you're not stimulating all the other parts of your brain. So this is, I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do, do a book like this and get people interacting. I mean, like we used to do in the old days. I mean, my whole childhood, my parents and all of their friends, they were always doing skits. Mm-hmm. They were doing charades, playing cards. Now, that's stimulating. you know, and that kind of thing. So I think you've done a great service here, Henry. I like this book.
Well, thank you.
I think it's fun.
I enjoyed writing it. I'm working on a second book now.
Good. And that, so it keeps you busy, keeps your mind busy.
Right.
When all those gray cells working, that's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. And it's very nicely done. It's a nice size book and just easy to read, so that if you get together, you know, put on these skits. And I like that they're two people skits. I used to do skits. I had a girlfriend, and we used to do Lucy and Ethel skits.
Oh, yeah.
My sister made us the costumes from the I Love Lucy show. Do you remember the program where they wore fashion from Paris, which were made out of burlap bags?
Yes.
My sister made those for us. And we would do skits for different groups, again, to cheer people up. and wonderful to do at hospitals. We used to do a lot of that type of thing, go to places and
yeah,
and put
assisted
on skits.
Living places.
It,
or
it was wonderful. Yeah, lots of fun. So I think this is a wonderful idea, Henry. So, Henry Berner, you're an author.
Trying to be a good one.
Congratulations. So, it's just fun. It's fun. It's always fun for me when I find somebody who's really found this joy that I talk about. Because when I named the program Joy on Paper, I meant not just the joy of writing, but also the joy that people get from reading. Mm. And that's so important. So, you know, Randy, what is your reading background? Do you enjoy reading? Who do you like to read?
Yeah. Weirdly, since I started writing, I've been reading an awful lot less. Just partially because I get an idea, I want to type it down, and also I don't want to be as influenced by other people as I'm afraid that I might be. But I grew up reading. I cannot remember a time when I couldn't read. I can remember a time when I couldn't read very well, but I can't remember when I couldn't read. But I, you know, as a kid, I was always cramming down Hardy Boys mysteries and you know, beginner stuff like that. And then I got really into Golden Age science fiction and read everything by every author that I could possibly think of. And then I got sidetracked into, you know, quality literature. So you're kind of expected to put the pulp stuff up on the shelf when you do that. But, you know, eventually I got tired of that. Not really tired. I just got to missing the ray guns and stuff. So I came back to reading more of the potboiler science fiction from my youth, and found other weirder, more esoteric authors, you know, in there, like Thomas Dish and Philip K. Dick and stuff like that. I found them, you know, slightly before they were trendy. And but I don't really have, like, a beyond a preference for science fiction. I don't really have a preferred genre beyond that. I'll just read anything anybody puts in front of me.
Well, when you're writing a story, mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about one of your stories, like
sure.
Maybe The Mark of Cain? Do you want to talk about that one?
I would if I could remember what it is. Oh, okay, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that one now. Yeah.
I know. Do you want to talk about that one?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So?
Okay. Some of that, some of that takes some of its stylistic inspiration from John Varley's novels. He did a whole bunch of novels that were set on a heavily populated moon. And so I grabbed a couple of just aesthetic elements from that. Like, you know, there's a huge plaza in there that's called the Varley Plots, which is a nod to him. But the idea was just basically demographics. People, I'm not sure the best way to phrase this. When I was raised, we were supposed to, you know, just completely ignore race, which we did. I mean, that was the way things were done. And, you know, I had friends of all different races and things when I was growing up, and suddenly that started becoming contentious in some elements of society again, mainly because demographics are gradually shifting to fewer, you know, to a smaller percentage of the population being Caucasian. And I got to wondering, hey, what happens if that continues? Eventually, obviously, you're going to get to a point where, you know, Caucasian folk are the minority. I don't really care about that at all, but I got to thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if there were some immortal people that couldn't change and ended up sticking out like a sore thumb in the society? So the story is essentially about vampires who can no longer hide on Earth because ain't no more white people on Earth. So they went to the moon, which is initially where the wealthy people from Earth went, but the same thing eventually happened there. So you have a handful of vampires that are basically hiding in unused portions of town. You know, one of them rents himself out to parties as Bela Lugosi, so nobody really notices. They assume he's wearing makeup, but he's not. And they're just trapped. Plus, you know, on the emotional level, it's just about the despondence of being around for centuries upon centuries upon centuries and having less and less connection to the world you're in. That's ultimately what it's about, is just the sense of alienation of just having lived way too long and everything around you is alien and strange.
So, you know, this is what I love about sci-fi writers. They come out with the strangest ideas.
Yeah, it was kind of an odd one.
I thought that was an odd one.
Yeah.
When I started, I said, okay. I always like a book that starts off with a really good sentence, and this is a short sentence. I am so hungry. And I thought, okay, now I have to find out why is this person hungry. And so that's, you know, sometimes it's just a little sentence like that that can catch you, because thanks. I read it and I said, okay, well, I've got to, I think at the time I was thinking, you know, I'm sort of hungry. I have to find out what's going on here. So it's just, quite a few I really enjoyed. I thought, well, I mean, I enjoyed all of them, but there was one, where's the other one? I think the Coast Guard one.
Oh, yeah.
Do that one.
Okay. Originally, like 15 years ago, I started writing a novel that was an alternate history of the space program. What if we didn't stop the Apollo program when we did? Because there were three other missions that were planned. And most of that didn't get done. And most of that equipment got reassigned to the Apollo program. To the Skylab program, excuse me. And one of the capsules that we sent up to the Skylab developed a defect while they were in orbit. So they weren't sure if they were going to be able to come back down from the space station on their own, or whether they were going to have to launch a rescue mission or whatever. And when I was being really OCD and going over all of this unpublished NASA stuff that had just recently been published, I noticed that the one that developed the defect would have been the Apollo 18 mission to the moon. And so it would have presumably developed the same defect on the way to the moon. And then, you know, we knew who the crews for these missions that never got launched were going to be. And I noticed that Fred Hayes would have been the commander of that mission. And Fred Hayes was also in the Apollo 13 mission, which they almost died. And here he is, you know, so had history gone down this other route, he would have been on yet another crippled Apollo heading to the moon. And I was like, well, he's a Jonah. He's just bad luck on the ship. And I had to write a story about that. Yeah, exactly. So I had to write that.
Yeah, I like that. I like that one very much. Partly my association with the Apollo. I was lucky that when I was working with Walt Cunningham, he took me on a tour of we were in Texas at the mm-hmm. time at Johnson Space Center, and so I got to do all the back, you know, backstage kind of stuff and go to all the hidden places.
That is so cool.
Oh, it was wonderful. I just loved it. Had lots of fun. So it was when I read that story, I got a kick out of that one.
I tried to do that one as technically accurate as I could without making it boring. I went, you know, I pulled out a bunch of my dad's old stuff and was going over it and so on.
No, it's an excellent story. I really like it. So I just wanted you to know that. I thought that was really cool. Oh, well, it's just so nice when I'm talking to writers and. Sometimes writers who are, as you were saying, one of you were saying, it's very solo. You're by yourself.
Yeah.
You're alone. And it is hard for some writers to get out there and share. They don't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm. They're
a little bit worried about being criticized. But I explain that that's good. You have to be tough. Mm-hmm. Because, just heaven help you if you are not up to it, because if you ever do get an agent and you ever do get a publisher, they are horrible. I mean, they are what the things they will do and the things they will say. You have to be able to take it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that you can hide away from if you want to get, you know, into the big time. But if you want to get better, even if you just, you know, continue your, you know, on a smaller level, you get better all the time to get this feedback.
One of the things I really like about the Newport Ritchie group is that they're very good with criticism. When I first started writing out a zillion years, I was hypersensitive to criticism. You know, just any, you know, you really need to put a comma here. You take that as like a blow to the soul. And you gradually develop a thick skin for that. And you're like, okay, yeah, they're right. You know, I don't need 112 words in one sentence. But one of the great things about the Newport Ritchie group is they're very supportive in the criticism. You know, if you've really screwed up, they'll always point out one good thing at least, and then very gently address the stuff that could be improved. So I really like that it's not just you suck. You know, it's much more, this needs a little bit of work, but overall you're really good. You know, they tend to build you up more than tear you down, and that's really helpful and rarely unusual.
Well, no, it is. I mean, I'm not saying it's unusual, because there are groups where it is very tough and they are get unpleasant. But you have to have this feedback, because you cannot do it yourself. You know, there are people who hire beta readers, but if you can do it in a group, I think it's better.
Yeah.
I think it's much, much more helpful, a supportive group, and a group that's encouraging, and they want you to succeed, because you're not in competition with each other. You're in competition with all the millions of other writers out there. And everybody wants to get better as they go along. And you do. As you write, you learn how to paint that picture. Like you did here there are some of these stories in here where Randy, you really paint a picture. I can see it, and I got really thrilled with it. And the same with your book, Cherry Ames, well, not Cherry Ames, but the homage to Cherry Ames in Deadly Secret. So, again, it's just wonderful to see the way that you all work together.
I just wanted to say that our group, we have, excuse me, set some ground rules for the way we operate. And one of the things that we've taught our people to do is to try to bring out at least one thing that they liked about what they heard. And as Randy was saying, we try not to just make it all a negative experience. We want people to know that we found things that we thought were positive about what they heard, what they read also. And we really have a heart for, and our whole desire is for uplifting and supporting the authors and helping one another to become better writers and more successful writers. And, you know, our we can't gauge success by the number of books that we sell, because we've talked about that. That's just a hard thing to do, sell books. But I think what constitutes real success is when whoever it is has heard what you're writing or read what you're writing, is entertained and enjoyed it, then that's success. And so even if it's only one person, so we enjoy listening to one another and are entertained by one another and want to help each other become better. That's what we're all about. To tell you the truth, I never appreciate the comments that just go, "Oh, that was a great read," because that doesn't do anything for me. I would rather have somebody say, "Well, you know, that was a great read, but I saw this and this and this that you could do to make it better."
Okay, well, that's the wonderful thing about your group. And again, the event is on Saturday, March 4th, 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And it's at the library there on Main Street, 5939 Main Street. It's going to be fun, and there's lots of things to do in the town. Get up there and meet the authors, get autographs, talk to the authors, and get inspired by their books. And among the authors will be Catherine Long with her Deadly Secrets, Randall Shands with Clearinghouse, and of course Henry Berner with Skit Trivia, which is a fun book. The three of you, thank you so much. I'm sorry that Paul couldn't make it in. Paul S. Moore, he wrote a book called Rules of the Campfire, which I found also very amusing and very interesting. He's got a strange mind.
Yes.
it's fun. Again, thank you so much
for
being here.
Thank you, Patsy, for having us.
Well,
we enjoyed
it's great.
It.
And I think that I will have them do book buzzes for you so that we can have those and play those and send them to you, because part of the thing of really marketing your books is to have a platform and to have all of that. I don't know if you do. Do you have Facebooks that you want people to go to, or websites you want people to go to?
I've got a YouTube channel.
YouTube?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have an Author Central channel address on Amazon.
Hmm. But if they want to come up and see your group, they can just contact the library there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Great. Well, I'm out of here now. We're going to have to say bye-bye, but thank you again for being here. So it's been lots of fun. And everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your books will be turned into major motion pictures, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So start writing, because I'm hoping for Carol J. Perry's book. I love her series Haunted Haven, which is set right here in Florida, and one of the ghosts is Babe Ruth, and I love Babe Ruth so much. He's my favorite. I am a baseball person, and I follow the Detroit Tigers, so you know that I have to be a dedicated a baseball lover if I follow the Tigers. I don't think they're going to do that well, but I love them. And say something nice to somebody today. I'll say something nice to Big Ed in the control. Thank you, Ed. You controlled all of us today.
Thank you, Ed.
Usually he only has to control me. Today he controlled you guys too. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
It's time for the Tuesday edition of Canada Calling, the news from home for vacationing Canadians. Prior Smith speaking from Toronto. Thanks for joining us. Well, the next provincial election in Alberta happens in May. Here we are in February, and the United Conservative Party under Danielle Smith and the new Democratic Party under Rachel Notley are already in full battle readiness. Both parties have been running attack ads for the past couple of weeks, despite the fact both of them say they're going to be sticking to the facts and sticking to the truth. Both parties have raised millions, so the only way to avoid an onslaught of ads is to keep your radio, TV, or computer turned off. And speaking of Danielle Smith, she certainly has stirred things up in Alberta with a proposal to give $100 million in aid to energy companies. The money's supposed to go to essentially pay those firms to clean up old and abandoned well sites, something the companies are supposed to be doing and should be doing on their own dime. There are some 170,000 abandoned and inactive wells, many of which are leaking contaminants into the groundwater. All of this unfolds at a time when the energy sector in Alberta is pulling in huge profits. Today is the first day in more than 8 years that John Tory hasn't been in the Toronto mayor's office at the crack of dawn, his career abruptly ended by resignation after an extramarital affair came to light.